Blog Talk Radio.
Ladies and gentlemen, coming to you live from the Late Late Shift Studios at Steve's Extra Bedroom, it's the Late Late Shift with your host, Steve.
Are you having a pretty good one? I certainly hope that you are. I can't really complain. I am about an hour or so removed from having wrapped up my other show, The Late Shift with Steve on LOP Radio. Hopefully some of you guys at least check that out. If you're not into wrestling, then I would suppose you wouldn't necessarily want to check it out, even though it is a pretty damn fun show. We have a pretty good time. But it's been since, Friday night when I did this show last. So, yeah. Been a little while, and I hope that it has treated you well in the interim. As per usual, I have nothing to fucking talk about here, though there's plenty of stuff going on. I just want to get this out of the way. We might talk about this at length another time, but for right now, the Bill Cosby stuff has taken another turn, and come to find out that it's not just accusations. At least all those accusations against the guy were stacking up, you know what I mean? And, I mean, if you were a very optimistic person or just somebody who really, 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 really desperately really wants to hope for the best in someone, you could have, been like, I believe him. He says he didn't do it, but I'm going to give him the benefit of the doubt. He's fucking Bill Cosby. He was Dr. Huxtable. I'm going to give him the benefit of the doubt on this one. Dude was Fat Albert. Come on, man. He used to show me picture pages back on Sesame Street and whatnot. So I'm going to give this dude the benefit of the doubt. And let's just say that he did not rape a bunch of ladies. But then, of course, it comes out today that he had a deposition, about stuff back in, 2005, where he full-on admitted that he drugged at least one person with Quaaludes, which is an old-school 70s-style drug, and basically drugged her in order to bang her, which is essentially rape, So he has essentially admitted to it. And this recently came out. Why it took so long to come out, who the hell knows, but I'm sure there's more to the story than I know about because I haven't read anything about it. I've just seen the general conversation that's been going on about it because, I read about stuff like this just so I'm up on it in case the conversation arises and I need to have the discussion about it. I'm one of those people who is an expert in a few things, but I know a lot about, I know a little about a lot and a lot about a little, I guess is the way that you put it. I try to keep in that. But just bottom line, I wrote a Facebook and both a tweet about it earlier, and my core thing about it is that fuck him for being a scumbag and doing that to people. That's a shitty thing to do. But double fuck him from me because of the fact that he has ruined all of that stuff that I loved so much about him, specifically the Himself special, because I like the Cosby Show just fine, but it was never like one of my favorite shows or nothing. I wasn't one of those people who felt like I was raised by Heathcliff Huxtable or anything like that. I liked it just fine, but I didn't really connect to it a whole super duper lot, not because they were black, but because they were rich. I connected far more when I was coming up, Cosby Show was on prior to this show, but I connected far more with Roseanne, specifically at least as it pertains to something I can look at and relate to my family. My mom was not like Roseanne Conner on the show, but my family lived very much like that. There was an episode where they got the fucking lights cut off and they had trouble making bills and things of that nature, I could relate to that to far more than I could relate to a family that has a gynecologist for a father and a lawyer for a mother, a lawyer who never seemed to be working, oddly enough. But I don't begrudge anybody who did love The Cosby Show because, I liked it just fine. It just wasn't one of my favorite shows. But to me, the thing that I latched onto Cosby with was when I really started getting into stand-up comedy and I knew what stand-up comedy was when I was young. We've talked about this before. And I would watch, I would watch stand-ups on Letterman and Carson from time to time, but mostly Arsenio would have him on every once in a while. But mostly Letterman was my, he was my avenue through which to see all these guys. Kennison was on there a lot, and Stephen Wright was on frequently, and Bill Hicks was on every once in a while, guys like that. And then the first one I saw, which we've spoken about before, so we won't go too in-depth on it, the first stand-up special that I saw when I became aware of the fact that, oh, You can go to a video store and actually rent a tape that is nothing but a dude standing there telling stand-up for like an hour, hour and a half, 2 hours or whatever. And the first one I got was Robin Williams Live at the Met. But the second one that I got, and one that had a large impact on me, just as large an impact as Robin Williams Live at the Met, Bill Cosby himself. Himself was very influential upon me, not because it impacted my life deeply or anything, but just because it was a different style of stand-up, and it was, many people have made the comparison, and it is kind of true. He was kind of the clean Richard Pryor, in that he would find one topic, and he would talk about the same thing for like 30 minutes, and it would just be this long, ongoing story that would have multiple funny aspects to it that would twist and turn before he eventually went on to another topic. Eddie Murphy did it to a lesser degree, but Cosby and Richard Pryor were the two main guys. Cosby even more so, though. But I believe that one famous one that I've heard before, it's called "To Russell, My Brother Whom I Slept With." The entire side of the record, as I've heard Kevin Smith talk about, one entire side of the record was just one long bit about him and his brother trying to go to sleep in the same bed when they were younger. And they kept on making noises and stuff, and their dad would yell at them and stuff and be like, "If you make one more sound, blah, blah, blah," and all that shit, you know, kid shit. But, he would do that kind of a thing. And I loved himself. One of my favorite stand-up specials of all time, highly influential, one of the most popular stand-up specials of all time. And now I could never go back and watch that again. And if I do, it will be tainted. You know what I mean? I can go back and watch it again. But if I go back and watch it again, it will be tainted. And this is something I'm very familiar with, because of the fact that I am a wrestling fan. And for you non-wrestling fans out there, there are a few things that I'm sure that you know about professional wrestling. And one of the things that I'm quite sure that you probably remember that happened in professional wrestling was a few years ago, back in 2005, 2006, something like that, Chris Benoit was a very famous professional wrestler. If you were a professional wrestling fan, he was widely regarded as one of the greatest technical wrestlers of all time. And what that essentially means for non-wrestling fans, it means that his stuff looked real. It looked like he was really hitting you. And that was, and when he put a hold on somebody, it looked like it actually hurt. And that is because 9 times out of 10, it actually did. He was one of those guys who worked stiff. And if he chopped you, with his hand, you were going to walk away with a red mark on your chest and shit. He wasn't pulling his punches. He wasn't just fake putting on a hold and stuff. He would really knock the sweet Jesus out of you and hurt you while you're in there. But not, there's a subtle difference between hurt and injure. You know what I mean? If you're hurt, you can still work the next night. If you're injured, you can't work the next night. You can't feed your family. Benoit was a master at towing that line. Bret Hart is Bret the Hitman Hart, another wrestler who was like that. Very, very excellent at towing that line. They would hurt you over the course of a match. You know, you would feel everything that they were doing, but they wouldn't do anything to you that would injure you. And so that is what I mean by saying that Benoit was an excellent technical wrestler. And he was, as I said, widely regarded as the greatest technical professional wrestler of his era, maybe of all time. But over one really fucked up weekend when he was actually supposed to be at a pay-per-view, he was supposed to win a championship, a big championship. And it was a match I was very much looking forward to. It was going to be Chris Benoit versus CM Punk for the first ever time. And I was, as we call it in professional wrestling speak, I was marking out over the shit, man. I was so ready to see that match. I was so excited. And then he didn't show up, and that was unusual. And then the next night, Raw comes on the air. I was at work, and I was recording Monday Night Raw, which is the flagship show of WWE. It comes on every Monday night on the USA Network, cheap plug. And I do a show about it afterwards on LFP Radio, further cheap plug. But I got a text message from one of my mom's friends and was like, "Oh, my God, what happened to Chris Benoit?" And I'm like, "What?" Because I didn't know it was fucking working. So I immediately get online on my phone. I'm looking around, and lo and behold, Chris Benoit's not dead. And then as time moved forward, more and more information came out, and come to find out that it wasn't just Chris Benoit who was dead. His wife and his young son were also dead. And then late that evening, moving into the next day, really was when the story widespread broke, that not only were they just dead, it wasn't like carbon monoxide poisoning or something to that effect, because a little known fact among some people, that's what killed Weird Al's parents. Weird Al's parents, I believe it was a carbon monoxide leak in their home, and he was out on tour, and he just gets a call right before he's set to go on stage that, "Hey, your mom and dad died." If you ever watch his Behind the Music, that's the one thing, the one little not even a piece of dirt, but that's the one thing they could find on Weird Al where they could slap it there at that one portion where they're like, and then things took a downward turn. You know, because they had that moment has to be in every Behind the Music. That was the one they could pick on Weird Al for, was when his parents died, very unfortunately, and it's sad as shit. But initially, that was my first impression. That was everybody's first impression, that that was what had happened to Chris Benoit and his family. Oh, they're all dead. It must have been carbon monoxide. You know, you don't even initially think like they were murdered or something like that. No, carbon monoxide or a gas leak or something like that. You know what I mean? Radon, whatever the hell that is. But lo and behold, if we don't find out that Benoit killed his wife, he killed his son, and then he hung himself on his boat legs. He killed himself. It was a double murder-suicide. And it rocked the professional wrestling business, but more so than that, it rocked professional wrestling fans, because this was one of those guys who his on-screen persona was so squeaky clean. You know what I mean? This guy was, he was very straightforward. It's not like he was a fucking saint out there or anything like that, but he was a really straightforward, no bullshit. He seemed like a good fucking dude. You know what I mean? Very much like Bill Cosby. This was a guy who the presentation that he has chosen, the way he's chosen to present himself over the course of his career is, you know, he's no saint or anything like that, but at the same time, this dude is pretty straightforward, squeaky clean, like his, there's no demons hiding in this closet. That you, what I am is what I am, okay? And that's very much what Bill Cosby presented himself as, only in a funny manner, and what Chris Benoit presented himself as, only in a, you know, kind of like scary, I might break your fucking neck manner. But, you know, not really, but in pretend, but you know, whatever. So I'm very familiar with the concept of not being able to go back and enjoy certain things, because from the moment that it was discovered that Chris Benoit murdered him, his family, and then killed himself, it immediately tainted everything from his previous work. I have a lot of trouble to this day going back and watching anything involving Chris Benoit. Any of the amazing matches that he was a part of in professional wrestling, and he was a fucking artist in the ring. You know, the guy was, he could make you believe what you, if you're somebody like me, that's the sweet spot in pro wrestling that non-fans don't necessarily get, is that if you're sitting there watching and you're like myself and you not only know that it's scripted, but you know the minutia. You know that these guys are, as many would put it, they're really friends backstage, and you know that they're calling the match in the ring. You know that they've probably set up some high spots backstage before they came out. In some extreme cases, they've even rehearsed the entire match. That happens exceptionally, exceptionally fucking rarely, but it has happened before. Little things like that. You know all the little minutiae. You know full on that you're watching something fake. It's akin to going to the movies. I just went last week and watched Terminator Genesis. And, you know, you're sitting there watching it, and you know that there's fucking robots walking around fighting other robots. That ain't real. You know what I mean? Just blatantly fake shit. But if it can catch you, if it can sink you in, if it can hook you into, for a brief moment in time, you suspend disbelief, and it sucks you in. That's when you found the sweet spot. And professional wrestling can do that just like any other form of entertainment media. You know, be it a television show where you full-on know that this person doesn't exist, but you get sucked into their storyline and you cry for them and, you know, you feel their pain or you laugh with them and feel their joy, you know, shit like that. Friends or fucking ER, or I'm naming shows from the 90s now because I'm ancient. But, you know, shit like that. Movies, same way. Professional wrestling, very much the same way. And the reason that people get, one of the reasons people get so hooked on it, especially as a jaded fan like myself, I call myself jaded, but just, like I said, somebody who knows the minutia, if they can hook me, that means they've done a very good job. You know what I mean? And Chris Benoit was exceptionally good at pulling off that kind of match. That man could make you believe his performances. So he has a storied history. Like, the matches that this guy put on were, it's like he didn't have bad matches. You know, his matches started at all right and then ranged all the way to brilliant. You know, there was no bad part of it, you know, they were at least going to be watchable. So all these matches that I love so very, very much, and I can't watch them anymore, because every time I go back to watch them and start to, you know, lose it a little bit, maybe I start to, I can't ever get to that disconnect point, I guess is what it really is. I can't disconnect and get lost in the match, because in my mind, I'm always sitting there thinking that guy fucking killed his entire family and then himself. You know what I mean? And it's weird. I have yet to been able to get over that. Some people have been able to get past that. And more power to them. Just like I'm sure some people out there will be able to get past the shit that is going on with Bill Cosby, and they will be able to separate facts from fiction, and they will be able to go on and love Dr. Huxtable, or they will be able to go on and watch himself. They'll be able to go back and watch them old episodes of Picture Pages and fucking Fat Albert or whatever. Ghost Dad, even, which is a terrible fucking movie, but a good terrible movie, or it was before I couldn't watch it anymore. whatever they're going back to watch, some people can make that delineation that, okay, that's not the real Bill Cosby. This is him pretending to do stuff, and I'm all right with watching that because that has nothing to do with him being a dirty fucking drugging people rapist. But other people can't make that delineation, and I am one of those people, not because I... Listen, Cliff Huxtable's not a rapist, you know what I mean? Cliff Huxtable's a guy who likes motherfucking sandwiches and pirate movies and, you know, and wearing loud-ass sweaters and doing goofy dances. And he likes to run and stuff, too. Like, I know a lot about Cliff Huxtable. He's not a bad dude. He's a really, really good dude, actually. Bill Cosby's kind of a piece of shit. That being said, I can't look at one without thinking of the other. You know what I mean? I can't watch Chris Benoit in the ring throwing suplexes and hitting moves and celebrating and after big victories and holding up titles and shit without thinking, oh, yeah, that's that dude who strangled his fucking wife to death. Look, he's a coax table. You know? That's what pops into my head. Maybe it's a little bit morbid. I don't know. But I can't make that delineation. So the gist of the story here is fuck you, Bill Cosby. Great big giant fuck you, Bill Cosby. Not only because you are a piece of shit human being who hurt other people, but because you personally ruined something that I held close to me. Many, many other people feel the same way because of the Cosby Show and things like that. You were invited, and you're not listening to this, but Cosby was invited into their homes. Many, many people took this man to heart and genuinely gave a shit about the entertainment that he put forth out there in the world. You know what I mean? And for me, the one sliver of things that Bill Cosby produced out there in the world that I really latched onto was Bill Cosby himself, and I will very likely never fucking watch it again. Why? Because I will not be able to sit there and watch it without thinking, huh, I wonder if he raped somebody after he filmed that performance. And that's fucked up, but it's true. And, it's depressing, but there's always other media and other entertainment and other things out there to take your mind off of stuff like that, especially nowadays. It seems it's kind of a complaint that a lot of people have that we have this quick turnaround on the news cycle. That, something will be a story for a couple of days, and then it'll fade away, and everybody will be talking about this other thing. And, you know, this other thing that we were talking about, like, fucking Friday, like, it didn't go away. That is still a thing that exists. But that, you know, we're talking about something else now. You know what I mean? That's just the way that the news cycle works. That's also kind of the way that the human mind works. You can't dwell on one thing for too terribly fucking long. You know what I mean? There are some people out there who crusade on one thing, and that is their entire life, and that's what they do, and that's what they do, and that's what they do. And those people, I do not envy them, because I'm one of those people who I recognize that there is bad and there is evil and there is shittiness out there in the world, but I prefer to surround myself with happy things, if nothing else than just to kind of fool myself, to take my mind off of it. I'm aware that those things are out there. I will hold the discourse on those things. I will educate myself on those things, and I will have and express an opinion about those things. That being said, it's not going to prevent me from sitting down and watching a Friends marathon or petting my dog or, you know, wanting a cheeseburger. You know, it's just, you have to surround yourself with things in life that make you happy. Otherwise, you're just going to live in a pit of despair, and that's tough to fucking live, man. You know what I mean? It's tough to live that way. Really, really tough to live that way. And again, I don't envy those who do that type of thing. And if you are one of those people who has made it your life's mission to fight one specific instance, if you go out there and you fight against rape, for instance, if you're one of those people who surrounds yourself every single day with cancer and goes out there to fight cancer, then I love you. Thank you for what you do. You are arguably a better person than I. If nothing else, you are a stronger person than I, because I don't think that I could swing that way. You know what I mean? I don't think I could live my life in that fashion, but we do need those people out there to crusade and stick up for those issues that otherwise would maybe slip under the rug. And no issue should ever slip under the rug. That being said, though, we do surround ourselves with other types of media. And here the last few days, while all this other shit's going on, everybody's talking about, oh, gay marriage and fuck the gays and they're all going to hell and Jesus is going to come back with a fiery sword and lay waste to the entire United States and, you know, all that stuff that's going on this side. And then over here, you've got many of the same people who are like, fuck faggots, saying, we love the rebel flag. Yay for the rebel flag. And we've done shows on here about both of those fucking subjects. And I don't care to fucking touch on them again. We've been down that road before. We haven't really talked about the gay marriage issue as whole super duper lot, but we've brought it up and it'll get discussed at another point. My brother's gay. I mean, there's plenty of things to bring up about it. You know what I mean? And it's an important issue, but for right now, we've won. So if you don't like it, then I guess, you know, deal with it. You know what I mean? Surround yourself with something happy to take your mind off the fact that we're all going down the rainbow path to hell, apparently. But I digress. One thing that I've been paying attention to here lately, though, and kind of immersing myself, and I do this a lot. It dates all the way back to, really, it started in high school with my U.S. history teacher in 10th grade. It was Mr. Allen. And then it really, really amped up in 11th grade with Coach Mayfield, Mr. Allen was world history, and Coach Mayfield was U.S. history. And world history really grabbed my fancy, and then when we got into U.S. history, it amped it up because we specifically about things that interested me. Like, I've always had a strange fascination with the Vietnam War, World War II especially. Not even necessarily the fighting in World War II. I'm not really a big time war guy. Like, I've never researched Korea and stuff like that. I'm sure it's fascinating in its own right. But World War II, the thing that really grabbed me was we've talked about it before on the show, I believe, actually. I can't wrap my head around that mentality of, like, the whole Nazi thing. The Nazis are what drawn me to fucking World War II, honestly. There's a good villain, you know what I mean? Just like any movie or anything that we're far enough removed now. I was born in 1981, man. I don't know jack shit about what happened in World War II, aside from what I've read and everything. We're far enough removed from it that you can only read about it or see about it or watch something about it so that it is never inherently a part of your life. It is inherently something that is on a screen or on a page, and thus it is something, it's almost fictional, you know? It's not fictional, but it is almost, it's impossible to not view it. You have to view it through the prism of somewhat of imagination to a degree, you know what I mean? You turn it into a movie just to process it because we didn't live through it. I didn't live through it, you know what I mean? And unless you've been through that shit, you have no concept of what it is. But that has always really, really fascinated me. And as I mentioned, specifically World War II, because there was a sexy villain, you know what I mean? And I'm not saying that, ooh, Hitler, that nice piece of ass. But no, I'm not saying that. I just mean sexy from the point of view of, like, you know, like Darth Vader or, you know, somebody that draws you in. Like, ooh, that's a good fucking villain. I'm definitely intrigued in this just because of the fact that the villain's so damn good. It's like, you know, Lex Luthor, you know, Superman is a fucking big blue Boy Scout. But Lex Luthor, man, that dude's got some devious motivations going on, some deep philosophical things that I want to read about. So I will read Superman, not because I like Superman, but because I'm so entrenched in fucking Lex Luthor. That's the entire reason I watched Smallville, the TV show about Superman, when he was young. Clark was, you know, he was driving the show and everything like that, Clark Kent, and that's the persona of Superman. Well, he's not Superman. It's his secret identity, as it were. You know, Kal-El is his actual name. He's a little Superman, like, you know, refresher course here for those of you who don't know. He did his thing, and most of the show was about him, and it was fine from that regard. I didn't have any issue with it. I don't dislike Superman. I'm not a huge fan, but I don't dislike Superman. I like Batman way more, but that's neither here nor there. Superman's probably one of my top five superheroes, actually, to be honest. But anyway, the draw to the show was watching Lex Luthor slowly but surely go from being a dude who, you know, rich kid, to slowly but surely just evolving into virtually the embodiment of pure evil. You know what I mean? Just watching this guy slide down that slippery slope and try so fucking hard not to fall. Like, he was trying so hard to hang on to even a shred of decency. And every time he would grab hold of something, it was like it was greased and it would slip right from his hands. And he was going down a path that he could almost not prevent, just headed straight for evil. And it was fascinating to to watch that go down, and that was what hooked me to that show, honestly. And I'm telling you right now, when the guy who played Lex, and thus the character of Lex, left the show for like the last two seasons or whatever, I honestly continued watching the show, A, because I was already like fucking like seven or eight seasons deep into it at that point. I didn't want to quit watching then. You know, who the hell wants to be like, well, at least six or seven seasons, I guess we'll watch how it ends. There was that. But the main motivation, the part that kept me invested in it, was that I knew that at some point, even if it was just one episode, Lex Luthor would be back. And lo and behold, if in the final episode of Smallville, spoiler alert, but Lex Luthor does come back, and he comes back in style, and it made that fucking episode, it made that season, and it made waiting those two or three seasons or however long it was that he wasn't on the show worth it. So that's what I mean as it pertains to having a villain that will draw you in. And World War II has that, you know, that they got that on lock, man. There's never going to be a bigger villain than the Nazis. You know what I mean? So I've always been very fascinated by that. And I've always been very, very fascinated in mafia stuff. I wish I hadn't gone off on Bill Cosby so hard because I wanted to talk about this a little bit more this evening, but we've only got about 4 minutes of the show left here. But I've been into watching shows about the mafia and reading about the mafia, and that lifestyle just in general fascinates me to no end. I don't know what it is exactly. I think it's the romance of the era, you know what I mean? Because the mafia was really big from like the, you know, the teens or the 20s through about the 70s was the heyday, and into the 80s was when they were really busting it up and Giuliani really put the kibosh to it in New York, and it really kind of splintered into, you know, the fractions of what it is today. But if it, you know, some people argue it doesn't even exist today, but it'll always exist in some way, shape, form, or fashion. It's just not the same as it was back in like the 70s or the 60s or 50s, specifically the era of The Godfather. Or if you're looking at the 70s, the era of Donnie Brasco, which is a fantastic fucking movie. But speaking of The Godfather, a couple nights ago, I spontaneously got the urge after I watched a special called the KKK versus the Mafia, which is, we're just going to have to devote a show to talking about that at one point because it was fucking fascinating. And if you don't know about it, then I would be more than happy to talk to you about it and tell you about it in hopefully a mildly entertaining way with a few fucks and some ha-ha-ha's thrown in there so that it isn't boring, because I found it just insanely fascinating. It was only an hour-long special, and I probably could have watched 3-4 fucking hours on it, man. I was invested and was not ready for it to be over. So I looked at my DVD collection, because I've already been through all the mafia stuff on Netflix, and it's not like you can just go to the DVR and be like, well, there's some mafia stuff on the History Channel right now. You know, they only show it every once in a while. So I looked at my DVD collection, and I saw the Godfather trilogy sitting there, and I was like, fuck, when's the last time I watched The Godfather? And it's been probably 15 years since I sat down and watched all the Godfather movies. Maybe longer than that. Well, probably about 15 years, honestly. So I was like, fuck it, I'll watch The Godfather. So I watched The Godfather a couple nights ago, and my God, is it fucking good. Ridiculously good. So ridiculously good. I mean, I always say that I consider the greatest movie ever, the greatest movie ever made, in my opinion, is probably Forrest Gump, just because it appeals on so many different levels. And we'll talk about this, and we'll talk about this on another episode, definitely. But I am running out of time here, so needless to say, I watched The Godfather a couple nights ago. Last night I watched The Godfather 2, which is long enough that it is spread over two DVDs. Like, I remember back in the day when you would have to buy the two VHS set, but two DVDs, that means it's a long fucking movie. You know what I mean? So, like 300 minutes long. I watched The Godfather 2, and I was kind of hoping tonight to watch The Godfather 3, but if I went in there and started it immediately after ending this, then that would have me going to bed at like about 5:30 or so, and there's a special I want to watch on WWE Network about Dusty Rhodes, so it'll probably have to wait till tomorrow evening, to be honest with you. But The Godfather, man, The Godfather trilogy. If you have never seen The Godfather, go watch the motherfucking Godfather. That first movie is just brilliant. Just a brilliant, brilliant piece of work. And, yeah, it's weird what catches your interest, isn't it? Isn't it weird? To avoid thinking about all the bad shit that's going on in the world, you surround yourself with, like, Nazis and the mafia. What the fuck? What the actual fuck? That'll do it for this episode. It was really a hodgepodge, but it was kind of enjoyable, I hope. I'll catch you guys here in a couple of days. Hopefully you guys have a great one. Please take care of yourselves out there in the big, bad, really real world, and remember that nothing is trivial. Much love, guys. We'll catch you next time.